Radio Prague News.
Czech MEPs have approved Croatia's EU accession treaty. German President Joachim Gauck has written his country is aware of its historical responsibility for massacres at the Czech villages of Ligice and Ležáky during World War II. The Czech national football team faces Russia on Friday in its opening match at Euro 2012. The lower house of Czech parliament on Friday approved Croatia's EU accession treaty. 151 out of 164 deputies present voted in favor. Parliament's upper house passed the treaty earlier in April. The Czech government originally planned to link the vote on Croatia's accession with the vote on the Czech opt-out from the EU Charter of Fundamental Rights, a part of the Lisbon Treaty. However, that would have complicated the accession treaty's ratification, as the opposition-controlled upper house would most likely reject the opt-out. German President Joachim Gauck said in a letter to Czech counterpart Václav Klaus on Friday that Germany was aware of its historical responsibility for massacres at the Czech villages of Ligice and Ležáky during World War II. Mr. Gauck wrote the letter ahead of the 70th anniversary of the destruction of Ligice and Ležáky by the Nazis in retaliation for the assassination of acting Reichsprotector of Bohemia and Moravia, Reinhard Heydrich. He succumbed to wounds suffered in the attack in 1942, orchestrated by Czech paratroopers. As a result, Ligice and Ležáky were obliterated. In Ligice alone, all 173 men were executed, while most women and children were sent to concentration camps. German President Gauck wrote that the despicable acts filled him with deep sorrow and shame, but cited positive ties between Germany and the Czech Republic today as reason for hope. In response, Václav Klaus thanked his German counterpart, saying that he considered the letter a strong statement and positive gesture. Education Minister Petr Fiala recalled the head of the Center for the Preparation of High School Leaving Exams, Pavel Zelený, from his post on Friday over problems with this year's tests. The minister said that the state exams, which have been the source of continuing controversy, would be scrutinized in an audit with a group of experts assessing both their presentation and quality. Teachers, students, and experts alike have criticized the exams, including how they were marked, saying the methodology used was difficult to decipher and not objective. Pavel Zelený has been replaced at Cermat by Jiří Zika, the minister said. The new government party LIDEM, or For the People, which splintered from public affairs earlier this year, outlined its program and key priorities on Friday, putting stress on economic and individual freedom. A representative for the party also revealed that LIDEM was readying to launch a beta version of a new website. The party was founded by former public affairs politicians led by Karolina Pík, who defected from public affairs after its de facto leader was found guilty in a corruption case. The Czech Republic's national football team plays Russia later on Friday in its first appearance at the Euro 2012 championships in Poland and Ukraine. Team manager said that striker Milan Baroš, who experienced a thigh muscle problem earlier in the week, is fit for the game. The match starts at 8:45 p.m. CET. I'm Jan Velinker, and that's all the news for now.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, and my name is Sarah Borůvka. Welcome to the program. Coming up today, a Czech soccer star is quite upbeat on the national squad's Euro 2012 chances. We have all the latest business news. And then later on in the arts, Rosie Johnston takes us to a conversation with photographer Jiří Jirů. All that and more coming up, so do stay with us. Friday night at 8:45 p.m., the Czech national team meets Russia, its first opponent in the group stage of the Euro 2012 soccer championships, hosted by Poland and the Ukraine this time. The Czechs will also be playing Greece and Poland in the group stage. Ahead of the kickoff, we spoke to Czech soccer star Pavlína Šťastná-Nováková, who previously has played with FC Bayern Munich, as well as other international teams, about the Czechs' chances, the health of the squad's star players, and the strengths of the Czech national team.
The strengths are very quality players who play in great leagues in Europe, especially Premier League, like Petr Cech in the goal and Tomáš Rosický. I think those two players are our best players in our squad, and it's very important to get them healthy into the games. Hopefully Rosický will not struggle with injuries and will be healthy and will be in the good mood as the last games for Arsenal in this current season. And Petr Cech had a great season with Chelsea. He celebrated the Champions League. So hopefully those two players will be crucial for our team and will lead our Czech team into the quarterfinals, which I hope and all Czech people hope.
And our first game is against Russia. Now, what kind of opponent is Russia? What are some of the challenges of playing this particular team?
Russia is very a strong team, and they have a good self-confidence, I think. They are sure that they will reach the quarterfinals, but it will not be easy for them. I think Czechs in the first opponent of the group today will be very hard game. Czech will provide the defensive tactic, and Russia will not have easy game to play. They have strong forward in Arshavin and the midfield player Karjakov. They both are playing for Zenit Petrohrad and have foreign experiences from Premier League as Arshavin, but hopefully they will not play their best games against Czech team. So hopefully the Czech defense will celebrate success today.
I certainly hope so too, and you already touched on this, but there have been some players that are quite important that have been suffering from health issues, among them team captain Rosický and also Milan Baroš. Do you have any information on what their latest status quo is?
I don't have any better information than media has, but everyone hopes that Rosický will be able to play. Milan Baroš, it's maybe a little bit worse. We'll see if his muscle problems will be better than expected and he can play today. But if not, that's not so big problem. Rosický would be more important for the team. So hopefully Rosický is a crucial player for Czechs, and hopefully Rosický can play.
That was soccer star Pavlína Šťastná Nováková talking about the Czechs' chances at the Euro 2012 championships. And as we say here in Prague, Češi do toho, we will of course be cheering on our national team tonight. Next up is Hansa Richter, who joins me in the studio with the latest business news.
The Czech economy contracted by 0.7% of GDP year-on-year in the first quarter of 2012, according to adjusted figures released by the Czech Statistical Office on Friday. Compared with the previous quarter, the economy shrank by 0.8%. However, the latest data are more positive than previously announced estimates of a 1.0% decrease. Analysts said the contraction was caused by a sharp decrease in VAT intakes as well as in consumption tax revenues, particularly from tobacco products. The statistician said many people bought their cigarettes and tobacco supplies at the end of last year in anticipation of tax hikes.
And the unemployment rate decreased moderately to 8.2% in May, down from 8.4% in the previous month, the Ministry of Labor and Social Affairs said on Friday. Over 482,000 unemployed people were registered in May, which is more than 15,000 fewer than in April. The number of new jobs increased by 4.7%. The highest unemployment rates were registered in the districts of Most and Uski nad Labem in northern Bohemia, and Jeseník and Karavina in northern Moravia.
The Czech lower house on Tuesday overturned a Senate veto and approved EU legislation that will end the monopoly of Czech Post for delivering letters and postcards. If signed into law by the president, the bill will end the state-owned postal company's monopoly in 2017. The senators rejected the bill over concerns it would lead to the closing down of post offices in small towns and villages. But the legislation obliges Czech Post to continue all unprofitable operations for a five-year period after the liberalization and obliges all private postal services providers to pay into a fund that will cover the Czech Post losses.
A new study by the Prague-based Serge EI Institute has determined how much decreasing Czech education standards cost the economy each year. The researchers studied what impact an improved performance by Czech pupils in the PISA tests would have on the economic growth and discovered that should the standards return to the level of 2003, it would raise the Czech GDP by 169 billion crowns or nearly 8.3 billion US dollars. In 1995, Czech pupils were among the best within all the OECD countries, but education standards have been on a steady decline since then.
This week saw the latest installment in a battle between Czech billionaires over who will control the lucrative coal and energy business in the country. The Czech Coal Group, controlled by one of the richest Czechs, Pavel Tikaš, ended a contract to supply brown coal to the Opatovice power plant, owned by two other big players on the market, the PPF Group, which belongs to the multi-billionaire Petr Kellner, and the JNT Holding. Czech Coal said they ended the contract over the power plant's failure to pay its 500 million crown debt. However, the plant's management said Czech Coal was only pushing for an increase of coal prices. The Opatovice power plant was Czech Coal's second largest customer after the state-owned energy giant ČEZ.
A new glass-producing plant opened this week in the old glass-making town of Svetlá nad Zázavo in the Bohemian Moravian Highlands, creating at least 25 new jobs. The firm Bohemia Machine said they invested dozens of millions of crowns into the new plant, which will process some 4 tons of glass a day. The new factory will produce utility glass products based on Czech designs. Some see the new factory as a fresh start for the traditional Czech glass-making industry, which has been heavily hit by the economic crisis. That was Hansa Richter there, who brought us all the business news for this week. And now it is time for our feature, The Arts. Jiří Jiroux developed a love for photography from his uncle, the avant-garde Czech photographer Václav Jiroux, before studying the discipline in Brussels and working for U.S. publications such as Time and Newsweek. In the course of his career, Jiří Jiroux has snapped celebrities ranging from the Bee Gees to Queen Elizabeth II and spent almost a decade working as President Václav Havel's official photographer. Jiroux divides his time between Prague and Brussels, which is where he found himself on August 21, 1968. Rosie Johnstone with this edition of The Arts.
Jiří Jiroux developed a love for photography from his uncle, the avant-garde Czech photographer Václav Jiroux, before studying the discipline in Brussels and working for US publications such as Time and Newsweek. In the course of his career, Jiří Jiroux has snapped celebrities ranging from the Bee Gees to Queen Elizabeth II and spent almost a decade working as President Václav Havel's official photographer. Jiroux divides his time between Prague and Brussels, which is where he found himself on August 21, 1968.
My mother, when I called her from Brussels, I said, listen, should I come back or should I stay? And she says, well, first you stay where you are. We shall see how it's going to develop here. And just wait and the Russians will move out. So they moved out like 25 years later, so 30 years later, so I stayed there.
Can you tell me a bit about those first years in Brussels when you moved there in 68? How old were you and how was it to settle in?
I don't remember exactly. It's such a long time. I guess I was like around 25 or something. But here I was already a photographer in Prague and I was actually already working for some newspapers as a photographer. So I thought that the transition would go smoothly and then I will continue immediately as a photographer for over there for the newspapers. But it was not so easy as I thought because evidently the French was very bad. I had only a little English. So, but these days the people have been very helpful to the refugees from the East, especially because of the Russian tanks being here. It was a big story. I started to ask for the workaround, but it was impossible to get anything. So I thought, well, I'll go to school. So I went to the movie school over there, something like here. They have FAMU over there. They have Lensas. But again, it was in French. It was difficult for me, but little by little I was getting better. But after 2 years, I had to quit, actually 1 year and a half, because I had nothing to eat. So I found a job, a little bit degrading for me, because I started to develop the photographs for my competition photographers in some press agency.
You sort of ended up taking photographs to places like Newsweek and Time. What sort of things were you doing for them, and how did you get your big break there?
I just did it the way it's impossible to do today. I just went to the flat of the Time correspondent in within EC, and he received me, and he was there for Time magazine, a special correspondent for European Union, Roger Beardwood. And he started to use me as a freelance for Time within the European Commission. So I was there once a week for all the meetings and this kind of not very creative job, but very well paid, because these days New York paid like 3-4 times more than the European papers.
Can you tell me a bit about coming back to Prague, when you first sort of came back, and why you decided after all these years to sort of have a second house here and come and sort of live here at least part-time again?
Well, it was probably the biggest decision of my life. After the one that I will stay, I won't come back. I developed the clientele in basically from New York, New York Times, Business Week, Newsweek, People Magazine, all of these big blue chips. They've been my clients, and they also sent me, when it was an anniversary of Russian invasion, 1988. So I was at the Wenceslav Square, and there was really not enormous manifestation, but still manifestation with the police chasing us and everything. And I was very afraid, because they could put me in prison. Because beside the fact that I was sentenced for 2 years in prison, without my presence here, of course, for the paragraph leaving the country, and it was scary because of these white helmets at night, all Wenceslas Square, all these big trucks putting all the manifestants inside, and I was very, very scared, really.
One future politician who you then went on to photograph quite a lot of was Václav Havel. Can you tell me a bit about working as his personal photographer?
Well, it was this big decision, because when I had the offer to become a personal photographer of President Havel, I was thinking, my God, what am I going to do now? You know? So finally, I made this decision, and I came back to take this job, which was very Hollywood-like, because I had an office at the castle looking at the beautiful Prague, looking from the window. It was unbelievable. Trouble is that they said, well, we don't have a budget for this. And I said, well, money is not really important now, because I could make the money selling the pictures to my clients abroad. So they gave me a salary of $200 a month. But I said, yes, well, why not? Yeah.
You come from a family of photographers. You've said yourself in the past that you've sort of been shocked when you see sometimes the similarities between your uncle Václav's photographs and your own. But you studied photography formally in Brussels. There are so many very high standard, very famous Czech photographers. Would you say that you are part of that sort of tradition?
Photography was basically a family business. My uncle was an avant-garde photographer before the war and after the war. He was actually even 5 years in Dachau, and that's why also he couldn't photograph for 5 years. But when he came back after the war, he created the photography magazine, which was a quarterly, and I was helping him already while I was in Prague still. helping him with it a little bit, but I was young, I was around 20. But he helped me a lot. He taught me, actually. And I hold his flash and carrying his bags around, and then he let me even develop his photos, and he made about 11 photo books. But now it all disappeared. I came back, my aunt was dead, he was dead, and the whole archive disappeared to different places. One of them is National Museum Archive. So it took me also some 1 year before they let me go to look at it and to get some copies out of it. That's why I made a big exhibition here, two generation photographers. And, it was quite a bit of success.
It seems like throughout your career, you've taken a great deal of very different sorts of photographs. I mean, I saw downstairs, you've got one of Arnold Schwarzenegger, I think on the Vltava River, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. You've taken a lot, you've taken photos of the Bee Gees, you've taken sort of photos of European politicians and lots of sort of more portrait-style photos of women. Is there a particular series or epoch that you're particularly happy with?
Well, it was a project about USSR, actually, because 1987, People magazine decided they're going to make a special issue, which will be called People Goes to Russia. And we have been a group of journalists, and I was a photographer sent there. I was also afraid to go there, even having Belgian passport. That was during the time of perestroika of Gorbachev. So within 6 weeks in whole Soviet Union then, and it was the biggest work I ever done. Then I made a book out of it, actually. It's right here. I called it Photostroika, like Perestroika. So, but it was a really the most interesting work I had, because you wake up in the morning and you live in Russia for 6 weeks. It's amazing.
When he isn't in Brussels, Yuchiyiru can often be found in his Prague gallery on Jaromirova Street in the capital's Nuslay district. Pay it a visit to see the aforementioned picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger afloat on the Vltava and much more from the photographer's portfolio.
Photographer Yuji Yiru was talking there to Radio Prague's Rosie Johnston. This episode of The Arts first aired in September 2011. And I'm afraid this brings us to the end of our regular programming, but of course we are rounding that off for you with ABC, our popular Czech language learning program, brought to you by Pavla Horáková.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague's ABC of Czech series, in which this season we explore vocabulary related to Czech food and cuisine. Today I'm joined by
Zuzana Durčáková.
Summer is getting closer, temperatures are rising, and so are sales of ice cream. Yes, today the whole lesson will be dedicated to ice cream, which has become almost a staple in many countries. The Czech word
zmrzlina
is directly derived from the Czech word
mrznout,
to freeze. The affectionate variety is
zmrzlinka,
and in colloquial speech,
zmrzka.
In the olden days, ice cream was sold by vendors in the streets, and when such an iceman,
zmrzlinář,
arrived at your street with his van, it was a big feast for every child. Today, ice cream in the Czech Republic is most often sold at confectionaries,
cukrárna.
In the communist days, the only type of ice cream you could get in a cone was whipped ice cream.
Točená zmrzlina v kornoutku.
The scooped variety,
kopečková zmrzlina,
reappeared only recently. If you want to give yourself a real treat, then the right thing is
zmrzlinový pohár se šlehačkou.
Literally, an ice cream cup with whipped cream, a sundae. Another popular variety is ice cream on a stick. The most common Czech word for that is
nanuk,
also the word for an iced lolly. Originally, it was a brand name inspired by the 1922 US-French film Nanook of the North, but over time it has become a generic term, as was the case with another brand name,
Eskimo.
It's possible that it was inspired by the US brand name Eskimo Pie. An idiomatic expression, still used mainly by the older generation, is
cuť na kládě v čokoládě.
And please don't ask me to translate that one. And we leave you with that for this week. The Czech word
zmrzlina
is enough of a tongue twister on its own, especially if you try to pronounce it with your mouth full of cold ice cream. So till next time.
Dobrou chuť.
Bon appétit.
Pavla Horáková with ABC wrapping up Radio Prague's English show for today. And of course, everything you've heard on the show today can be found at our website radio.cz. And I really recommend you check it out because there you can also discover a huge archive of texts and reports in both text and audio form. You can also sign up for a free news email or use our podcasting. And if you have any comments on what you've heard on the show today or in general about our program, we are always pleased to hear them. There are several ways to get in touch. You can either email us to english@radio.cz. You can find us on Facebook, where we have a profile under the name of Radio Prague, or you can also write us a letter to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2. And as of quite recently, we have a Twitter account, so make sure to find us there as well. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, from me, Sarah Borufka, and from all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.